Welcome to the Gadget Show podcast, the Inbox Edition. Now, this is the one where we step aside and let you take over your questions, your tech problems, your upgrade dilemmas, all of it.
But before we start digging through the inbox, a quick thank you to CEX for supporting this episode.
Yeah, because if you're eyeing up some new tech but you don't fancy paying that full launch day price, then CEX is well worth a look.
They've got loads of refurbished gear, phones, consoles, games, laptops, cameras, all properly tested, all working, and usually a lot cheaper than buying brand new.
Yeah, and if you've got loads of gadgets at home that you're not using, then you can trade
those in. What are you trying to say?
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, you've got basically half a house full of gadgets that you're not using that you could trade in. You know, at CEX, old phones, spare controllers, forgotten tablets, there's a few of them. You can turn them into something useful, maybe.
Hang on, have you hacked into my webcam or something?
I have, actually.
Yes, as Susie is suggesting, you can get cash or indeed store credit to put towards your next bit of kit. And everything CEX sells comes with a 5-year warranty, which is seriously reassuring.
So if you're planning an upgrade or you're just wondering what your current tech might be worth,
head to webuy.com or drop into your local CEX and see what you can find.
And by the way, I'm not liking what I'm finding when I'm looking through the cameras at your house.
Oh, okay.
Right then, let's get into our first question for this week's Inbox Edition. It's from Matt Francis. And he says, can Jason do a special on ARC Raiders, please? That's love from Cornwall, UK. Well, you can go and hang out with Jason in Cornwall if you want, Matt.
I'd love to do a full episode dedicated just to ARC Raiders, but that's not really within the editorial brief of the show. So tell you what I'll do. I'll do a nice long deep dive, a playthrough live playing ARC Raiders, tell you all about the game, what I'm up to, and I'll make it available as a video for our Patreon subscribers. How about that?
This is from David Giacovelli. Didn't know the show had returned. Back in the day, you guys were appointment viewing for me and many others, of course. And you are again. Oh, that's nice. Now that's good. I've subscribed. Great to see both of you looking happy and well. Hope the venture is a great success. That's really kind of you. Thank you very much.
We love that. More of that, please.
Yeah.
I've got one from Maverick Photography in response to Susie's comment about more men using AI than women. So what David says is, it sounds really sad and lonely. It doesn't, David, at all. As I'm a married guy in my 50s, and I chat to ChatGPT about my dog that I lost a year ago, my best friend, and it's just a sounding board to get things off my chest, share memories without getting into deep conversations about him. At my age, you can count the number of friends you really have on one hand. Facebook friends really don't count. That's why I think more guys use it than women. What an insightful and honest thing to say, David.
Yeah, and actually, you know, whatever makes you feel better is fine. I mean, it's always really sad losing a pet because you are losing a member of your family. You know, it's very emotional. And obviously, you have lots of memories of that pet. And you've shared a lot of conversations as well, probably, with your pet. I know I certainly always do. And you go through different times, don't you? And you talk to your pet. And then when they're not there anymore, there's this big hole. And of course, with people, it's the same. I mean, you know, you live with grief, don't you? When you lose somebody very close to you, it just walks alongside with you. I always say I'm 20 seconds away from crying, if we're being really honest, because that's how I feel since I lost my mom, you know, and that's just what you live with. And however you deal with that grief effectively is fine. That's, you know, whatever you want to do. And obviously, David, it makes you feel better talking to ChatGPT about your dog. You didn't let us know his name, but I don't think it is sad. I think it's whatever helps you through the day.
Nicely put, Susie. Right, final message of the week. And this one comes from one of our Patreon supporters. Barry got in touch after watching our feature on the AI actor, Tilly Norwood. And the music video that we talked about recently, because he wanted to show us that AI music isn't all that bad. So he runs a YouTube channel called Barry Music Tech Info. I recognise that name from our Patreon list, where he actually uses AI to create his own tracks. And he thought that we might like to see how he does it.
So instead of just sending a question in, Barry's dialed into the podcast, actually, to show us his setup and some of the music that he's been making on videos.
Yeah, so Barry, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Mate, you're the first Patreon ever to sit in the chair. Like, we should maybe do a bit more of this. I like it. It's very exciting. Okay, so I've got some questions for you. Do you see AI as replacing musicians or more like another tool? You know, like say, you know, a synthesizer or a drum machine back in the day would have replaced, I guess, keyboardists and drummers and would have been seen as a threat to their jobs. How are you looking at AI in that context?
I think it's a tool, and I personally don't think it should replace musicians. I think it should sit along musicians. Like, I'm a musician myself, so I've been making synth pop music for 30 years now as a known as Cyber Monday. And for me, this is like an extension. It's like my alter ego. So my musician AI artist is known as JJ Felix, and he's rock pop. So I can't play guitar. I can't sing the way he sings. I can't look the way he looks. And I've created him as like an extension of myself, and I can put him in any situation that I like. I can put in lyrics about myself, my experiences, but also what I think JJ's experiences would be as well. So for me, I see it as an extension.
Barry, first of all, you know, JJ is ridiculously handsome, was the first thing I noticed. And so much work has obviously gone into that YouTube channel. So, you know, well done. Always commend people that, you know, work really hard, and you can see the effort that's gone into it.
Thanks.
But when you're making a track then, how much of the creativity is yours and how much do you hand over to AI?
Yeah, so I always write the lyrics myself. And I'll always try and put in a top line as well. So whether that's the chorus, maybe it's a verse and the chorus. And that's one of the great things about this, is that people will just think that it's a click of a button, and it's not always the case. Like, I got lyrics down from my attic 20 years ago. They were 20 years old, and they would have just been thrown away. And I was able to make new tracks with JJ. So for me, it's even though he's like the vocalist and the AI generator is making the entire song, I'll then also try and work with the track afterwards in my own digital audio workstation and to add extra elements. I might even sing in the background, which I sometimes do. And then I do a lot of mixing to make it sound as good as it can, because the models at the moment are fantastic and they're getting closer to, you know, CD quality. But with some nuances, they need a bit more work.
Yeah, you get those little hallucinatory, I'm guessing, assets like you do in video or imagery.
I'm going to jump in, as you probably are expecting me to. What would you say to people that think that AI is just fake and lazy and a cheat and cheats artists out of, you know, money?
First of all, I'd say that it's not just a click of the button. For me, you can do a song in 30 seconds if you want to, but that's not how I use that tool. There are bad players in the game as well, just like everything else, and they are giving it a bit of a bad name. There's a lot of people with disabilities that are able to use this tool. So, for example, one of the person I collaborated with was known as Ava Bentley, and she's herself as a digital artist now, and she had an operation on her throat, and they damaged her vocal cords, so she could no longer sing. And for her, she was able to utilize her AI persona to actually sing. And it's a blessing for her, but she's had hate mail, she's had death threats, had people telling her to kill herself. It's become very extreme. Tilly Norwood's comments on that music video have been switched off. And I know exactly why they've been switched off, because people have very strong views about it. And I completely appreciate that. But what I would say is that bullying shouldn't be tolerated. And, you know, these AI artists, there are generally people very passionate behind them trying to make something of it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's crossed over into a dark side of bullying and the internet and this divisive nature. We talked about AI being divisive in the last podcast, I think, Jace, didn't we, saying how it, you know, cuts people in two.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, yeah. Humans aren't very good at controlling their emotions, which is very sad to hear about.
Which is kind of the point, isn't it? Is that, you know, it's the emotion. I mean, you don't get more emotional than music.
No, you don't. Right. And I think clearly you have a balance. And you sound very balanced as a person as well. So, you know, what you're doing, I can see the good in it. I think that we've seen a lot of AI music that is completely soulless. And, you know, for me, music is about soul. And so it's about balance, isn't it? It's about how much you're going to use something, because you, like you say, you can go back, and I remember very well, you know, with electric guitars, you know, the artists were turned against. Bob Dylan is the most famous one of all, you know, the whole audience turned against him because he wasn't using the acoustic guitar. And times move on.
Times march on.
But I suppose it's whether AI, if it's so easy to use and you can completely overtake and you can use other people's music, that's where you start to draw the line, and that's what has to be legislated against, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of legislation, maybe coming in. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, Suno settled with Warner Music back in November, but they've still got Sony and they've got Universal Music to go. Time will tell. For me, I couldn't sit on the fence and wait any longer with JJ Felix. It was really important for me to start releasing the music. And I know how you appreciate vinyl as well, Susie, in terms of having something tangible. So for JJ Felix fans, I actually made sure that that's an offering for fans as well. And in terms of the live thing, it is something I really do want to pursue. This is my ambition for JJ Felix. I really want him to be on stage somehow, and I am looking into it. I sent a load of little agents off yesterday on my phone to try and work out how people are already doing that with digital creators on stage, whether that's the use of hologram or whatever.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, I remember going to see Hatsune, I can never say this correctly, Miku, Hatsune Miku, I think, who was a fully digital avatar performer on stage. So it's like a Pepper's Ghost style effect on stage, but with a live band. The music is part electronic, part live performance. She doesn't exist. Her voice is synthetic. What I saw in, I think it was Tokyo, was an arena full of people having an amazing evening. It was about the music and the joy of something that moves you, and the origin of it, albeit a mixed reality, if you'll forgive that phrase, kind of didn't matter. She's a worldwide phenomenon. So Barry, what have you been working on most recently?
Sure. So I've actually wrote a track this weekend for the Gadget Show podcast, if you want to hear it.
Wicked. Yeah, please.
Watching you on TV, Susie and Jason meant a lot to me. Cross-legged on the floor every single week. Never knew one day I'd get to speak. I'm on the Gadget Show.
Oh, do you know what?
Oh, man. Bravo, bravo.
I can imagine that's got a sort of 90s feel to it, 90s rock feel to it. And I can imagine us on the Gadget Show back in the day having a challenge to make an AI track. And that would have absolutely bossed it, because you've got all the hooks and the tricks in there.
See, the thing is, the really interesting thing to me is I like to think of myself as very much an amateur enthusiast musician, in that I collect, you know, as you probably know, Barry, keyboards and drum machines and all the rest of it. And even at my very, very simple level, I understand the sort of narrative structure of a song. And what was interesting there was that the obvious middle eight and then the kind of the bridge, and there were some really nice moments in it. And so I can really see that, actually. I can see your DNA in it.
Yeah, it's bizarre, you know, actually. Yeah.
It's really interesting. And that's that human and machine working together. That's exactly what you were talking about. I could sense it in the tune. It's a really catchy tune.
Thanks.
Yeah. Barry, thank you for taking the time to contact us and absolutely to make that track for us. That's so sweet of you.
Yeah, and play us out with that.
Yeah,
God,
and it's lovely to meet you, and good luck. Best of luck with everything.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
See you, dude. Right. Time for something very exciting. The brand new Gadget Show competition is live. And this one's worth a huge £5,000 giveaway to spend at CEX.
And the nice thing about doing this through Patreon is that it's just for our core listeners, which means the number of entries stays sensible, and that gives you a much better shot of the prize.
So to enter, just go to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and sign up to one of our paid tiers. They start at about the price of a cup of coffee. And there are three levels, light, mid and max.
Light gives you one entry, mid gives you three and max gives you five. So if you fancy boosting your chances, then that's the one to get.
Once you've signed up, send us a direct message on Patreon with the answer to the following question. In what year did The Gadget Show first air on TV? Was it A, 2002, B, 2004, C, 2006, or D, 2007? And remember, you're not just entering The Gadget Show competition.
You'll also get ad-free episodes, early access, bonus content.
And get this, if you're on the max tier, that's the top one, you unlock the full Gadget Show archive. That's over 20 years of the show, at nearly 500 episodes. Isn't that an amazing thing, Susie? So it's a serious amount of tech history, not just your competition, that lot as well.
So extra content, better odds, and the chance to win a £5,000 tech shopping spree.
Yes, just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow to enter.
And you'll find the full terms and conditions linked in the episode. Right, Jay's tech quiz time for you. This one's all about little bits that you plug in, clip on, wave around, or occasionally trip over. We're talking gaming peripherals this week. Okay?
I should be okay.
The accessories, yeah, absolutely. These are the accessories that promise to make us faster, better, and occasionally, you know, stronger. So the question is quite simple. Which gaming peripherals were the biggest sellers of all time? I've got an estimated list here. I'm going to read out the top 10 in a random order. You've got to place them, with the number one being the best selling. I'm going to start with a big one. Let's start so you can play something kind of top endish. All right, okay.
Thank you. So let's go with
the Kinect. Microsoft Kinect, 35 plus million sold there. Where would you think that could sit?
Okay, so Xbox Kinect, I was at the launch in Los Angeles for
2010,
that.
Yep. Became the fastest selling consumer electronics device in history at that time.
Okay, I'm going to say third.
You're right.
Oh.
Yes, yeah, so now you've got a kind of measure. So that was 35 plus ish million sold of the Microsoft Kinect. Okay, let's go. Razer DeathAdder Gaming Mouse. So on the PC side, one of the most successful gaming peripherals ever is the Razer DeathAdder mouse. It first released in 2006. Yeah. Became a favourite with esports players thanks to its simple shape and high precision. So what do you think for that sales-wise?
7 or 8.
Okay, it's number 10.
Is it really?
10 plus million sold. Let's go iToy. So before Kinect, there was iToy. Released for the PlayStation 2 in 2003. The USB camera let players control games using movement and gestures. Especially popular in Europe and Japan.
I don't know. I had one. I didn't really use it, but I remember it. I can see it. I'm going to go for my favourite number in this part of the podcast, which is 7, Susie.
Close. It's 8.
8. Okay.
So 12 million sold of iToy. Let's go Skylanders Portal of Power.
Oh,
next.
The portal with the Skylanders characters. Oh, my children would bang on demographic for that. I loved Skylanders. I thought it was actually brilliant. They used to play with those little characters and they sort of translucent plastic.
Yeah, not just games, sold toys and everything, didn't they? Lots of them.
They did. The whole universe was brilliantly done. And that peripheral, that sort of portal that you placed them on, I remember that too. Again, though, absolutely no idea. Favourite number? I'm going to go 5.
Oh, yes!
Yes!
Yes! 5! 30 million sales. I mean, these are estimated, but yeah, about 30 million for Skylanders.
Great. I'm pleased because I spend a lot of time with those little characters.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go PlayStation Move next. Sony's answer to the Wii was PlayStation Move. Obviously, a motion controller system launched for the PS3 in 2010.
Those glowing sort of...
glowing wands, weren't they?
Yeah, the wands. Yeah, I was going to say like an ice cream, but yes. I like the move. I love the product design. I always love Sony's product design, be it their VR helmet or the Move controllers. You know, the consoles themselves, just really, really beautiful things. I'm just talking so that I don't have to actually answer.
I'm going to go
seven.
One away.
Six.
Yeah. Damn. 15 million sold of the PlayStation Move.
Satisfyingly squidgy, those glowing orbs were.
Mm. Okay. Let's go buzz. Quiz buzzers.
Yeah, buzz for the PlayStation.
Sony Buzz. Yeah, exactly. Quiz games came with colourful wild buzzers that turn the PlayStation into like a party game machine.
What the viewers and listeners need to be aware of is that Susie and I can't see these images. We are literally, we're just going on our own tech history. So it's funny how vivid these memories are, actually. I don't think it was that. I'm going to go nine.
You're correct. Well done.
Yeah,
okay, nine.
Good. Thank you.
So 10 plus million sold of the Buzz.
A little bit less mainstream. Not, it was quite mainstream, but a little less Sony, a little less gamer culture, a bit more family orientated. Therefore, I felt maybe not quite those numbers.
Okay. What about Guitar Hero guitars?
Oh, okay.
Which we used so much on the show. Remember being on the stage in Wolverhampton? At this, at the Wolfram Hall, playing Paranoid.
Really?
Yeah.
What, for Gadget Show?
Yeah, for the Gadget Show. Yeah,
really?
No, not generally, like in my youth with Ozzy Osbourne.
No, I thought you were on stage and you brought it on there.
With a bit of
Okay, so here's my thinking. Here's my mental framework for this, Susie. Hugely popular, but at the price point, not potentially in the uber big numbers, I would say. So I'm going to take a punt on it not being top three, even though it's deserved of that. Look at your little face, looking for cues in your smile. I'm still gonna stay on target, but you know, because it's an expensive thing. So does that mean that it therefore doesn't sell as many units? So I suppose it's more about profit. I'm gonna say seven.
Few accessories define the noughties, really, like the plastic guitar. Bundled with Guitar Hero, controls to... I could read all the bump, but you're wrong, it's four. I feel like you talked yourself out of that. 35 million sold of Guitar Hero.
It wouldn't be the first
guitars.
Time, Suze.
No, I know.
Oh, wow, that's a lot, isn't it?
Let's go. Nintendo Amiibo. So Nintendo launched Amiibo in 2014 as part of the Toys to Life trend started by Skylanders.
Seven.
You're going to be really surprised by this.
No, don't say it's top three.
It's top three.
I should have learnt my lesson. Nintendo are always up there, aren't
they? Yeah, they are.
But again, didn't feature in my universe at all. I have no experience of it. I just recognise the brand name.
It's just, it must be the global sales because they sold 77 million. Number two.
I'm amazed.
In at number two. So we've got number one and number seven.
Thanks. That helps me, actually.
Okay. You're going to know which is which. But anyway, I will go. DDR Dance Mats. So Dance Dance Revolution brought arcade rhythm games into the home, and the dance mats, the dance mat was obviously essential for this.
Just let me say this, it could be number one, because if there's
you've
one
spooked
peripheral,
yourself now, haven't you?
If there's one peripheral that everyone knows, a non-traditional gamers, like your mom, right? It's the dance mat. I mean, it's just the dance mat, but I'm going to say number seven.
You'd be correct to say number seven. I'm glad you didn't talk yourself out of that. Yeah, 12.5 million sold. Players stepped onto the directional pads to match the music.
I just want to go and play it now. I loved it.
It was just such a great family thing, wasn't it?
What I loved about Kinect, actually, was the dancing game on Kinect, because you didn't need the mat, and it used, you know, whatever it used, infrared or whatever. And it felt like it was really reactive, although dance mat traditionally much more precise as an input device. But yeah, that whole dancing game phenomenon, I loved it. We bought a karaoke set, actually, for Christmas, because we went away to a hotel, and we got so much fun out of it. So I that and a bit of air guitar. That's me sorted.
Exactly.
Sorted for Christmas. Anyway, what's number one?
Number one. So if I tell you that number one is a memory card.
Number one is a memory card.
Yes, baby. PS2.
Really?
Yeah. The PlayStation 2 memory card is likely to be the best-selling gaming accessory of all time, with over 160 million PS2 consoles sold. Saving your progress wasn't optional, and many players owned several cards to store different games. Yeah. Retail tracking in the US alone recorded over 28 million sold, meaning the global total is somewhere around about 80 million. Simple, essential, and completely unavoidable. The PS2 memory card quietly became the most successful peripheral ever made.
Susie, you've blown my mind yet again.
Well done, everybody.
Well done.
How did you do? Well, that's it for this week's Inbox Edition. Huge thanks for all the messages and the questions and the stories that you keep on sending in. We love them. Please keep them coming.
Yeah, it's one of our favourite parts of the show, sincerely, whether it's a tech disaster, a bargain you're proud of, something weird you found in a drawer, or an awesome song that you perform actually on the podcast. Send it our way on socials or email us at contact@north1.tv.
And as always, thank you, of course, to CEX for supporting the podcast. If you're thinking about upgrading, hunting down something retro, or trading in the tech that you're not using anymore, then head to webuy.com or visit your local CEX. And don't forget, everything that they sell comes with a 5-year warranty.
And of course, be sure to follow or subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're watching it on. The main Gadget Show podcast drops every week with the latest tech news, reviews, and whatever chaos we've managed to get ourselves into. But it's really important that you show your support with a simple like and a sub.
Okay, till next time.
See you later.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.